This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Tom, Richard and Brandy, 1 month after the great rains of 2024. We've been having quite a lot of discussion this morning, taking stock of where we are 1 month on, particularly when it comes to the business of property. Speaking to Jean Jahinki, he is Chief Data Cruncher at Cavendish Maxwell and Property Monitor, about what happened during the month of April when it came to transactions themselves, how the market was initially impacted, but also speaking to Alan Curry. He's an Associate Director at Espace Real Estate, and he was in talking about the knock-on effects now, whether or not people are asking more questions of real estate agents, whether there are communities that they might be a little bit less keen on. Also had a chat with the CEO of One Insurance Company, Watania. Gautam Dada spoke to us, and honestly, the conversation went in areas that I didn't think it was going to go. Could have spent twice as long talking to him, ended up discussing what happens to a car after it gets written off. All of that on The Bite Size for you today.
It's Thursday, May the 16th. That means it is 1 month since this. Thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder, feel the thunder. And what does it mean for Dubai 1 month on? We've got various experts joining us in the studio a little bit later on. Brandy, just quickly remind us who we've got in the 7 and 8 hours today.
Right. So we are speaking to four different people about four different aspects of what happened and where we are. Real estate's playing a big one, unsurprisingly. We're going to look at how the weather last month influenced transactions at the time. Jean Jahinki from Property Monitor, he is King Geek. King Data, if you like. He puts together the numbers for them and for Cavendish Maxwell. And he's been having a look at what happened to, you know, the filings, the transaction numbers, the prices and everything in April, and how it affected the market at the time and immediately after. And then you guys are going to be speaking to two experts, one in sales and one in rentals from Espace Real Estate, to have a look at the knock-on effects now. So are people who are renting avoiding certain communities, depending on what they might have seen on social media?
I was up in DIP on Saturday because we were doing a radio show up there, up at Mr. Toad's for our Saturday sports show. And I was talking to a couple of residents up there from the green community. There's still houses that are inaccessible because of the water up there.
Yeah, I was chatting the other day about a couple who are house hunting and, you know, having to move from one rental to another. It's not done and dusted just because the sun's come out.
And there's also a sort of, I'm sure there's a Latin word I could use for this, but there's a rubbish dump that is sort of just set up where there's an area that has been sort of designated where people are putting all the furniture that they can't use anymore. And apparently it's large. It's created this. It's just a, yeah.
Vesuvius?
It's a small Pompeii.
I speak as someone who is booking a flight to Naples simultaneously. It's interesting to see what effects it has. By the way, both good and bad on the real estate industry. So we want to know, is it changing what people are searching for, what they are asking for, if you like, what questions they're even asking agents? Is it changing the plans, if you like, that developers, the surveying that they're doing before they build, how they think about things like access roads, which, rain or no rain, by the way, wouldn't be a bad thing. One of the things that I've discussed with Jean is whether or not we will see a change in the way that property is valued before you buy it. Because at the moment, the surveyors are pretty much checking that it's there. Three bedrooms, tick, yeah, okay, looks over the golf course, fine, no, you know, a brief look for cracks, but no one's really jumping on floorboards. It's a valuation of what it is, almost, not the state it's in. Is that going to change? Are people going to pay independently for a different type of valuation to get an idea of how the house may have held up and how it might hold up in the future?
Dan Richards has been looking at the bigger picture of this. He's senior economist at Emirates NBD, and we asked him very simply today, Dan, is the 1 month anniversary of the rain and the flood. As economists, for you and the team at Emirates NBD. What have been your conclusions so far?
In the short term, it's already apparent in the PMI survey for last month that, of course, they did have impact on business and activity in April. In the headline reading, we saw fell to 55.3, down from 56.9 the previous month. Now, this is still well above the neutral 50 line and still indicative of robust growth, but all the same, it's the lowest reading since last August, and many of the respondents to the survey cited the impact that the floods had had on their business activity and on their new orders. However, when the May survey is released early next month, we would expect that this would have been recovered already, and given that there will necessarily be some rebuilding after the destruction and likely longer-term investment in resilience for future such events, it could even prove a boost to growth over the longer term.
That was Dan's take on the floods in Dubai and the rebuilding operation, but he also turned his attention to events overnight in the United States. We had the closely watched inflation report out, the core inflation report, and it was weaker than expected. Dan's been crunching the numbers.
Headline US CPI inflation was at 3.4% year on year in April, so that is in line with analyst expectations and a little slower than the 3.5% we saw in March. On a monthly basis, price growth was at 0.3%, so slower than the prediction that would remain at 0.4%, just as it was the previous month. And if you look at core inflation, so that is stripping out the volatile food and energy components of a basket, this was at 3.6% year on year, again slower than the 3.8% previously, and on a monthly basis 0.3%, down from 0.4% the previous month. And this was the first time in 6 months that annual headline inflation actually slowed from the previous month, in a positive signal for the Federal Reserve.
That's a lot of numbers to crunch. Thank you very much indeed for Dan, for his good offices. We also heard yesterday, after the data came out, from Neel Kashkari, who's the boss of the Minneapolis Fed. He was speaking, not necessarily about inflation, it was just a fireside chat at a conference, but of course he was asked about it. And he played down expectations that this 1 month of slightly weaker data is going to lead to an instant rate cut from the Fed. He said that the interest rate increases they put in place over the past couple of years now, he thought that they'd have a really severe impact in slowing down the US economy, but it hasn't happened.
I would have told you that that would feel like we'd be putting 2 feet on the brakes, slowing down the economy. It seems like there's more resilience in the economy than I had expected. So maybe because of some of these dynamics, these interest rates only really mean we're putting 1 foot on the brake and not two. And that tells me we probably need to sit here for a while longer until we figure out where underlying inflation is headed before we jump to any conclusions.
Neel Kashkari of the Minneapolis Fed.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are taking stock a month on from the rains. Yeah, we are going to hear a little bit later in the show from the guys and the girls at Espace about what we are seeing in terms of where people are renting and buying now. The questions today that they are asking real estate agents about the property they're looking to own or move into. But before that, we are going to have a look at what impact the rains had last month on actual property activity, because we've got the man who's always got the numbers in the studio with us this morning. Sian Jahinki is the CEO of Property Monitor and the Director of Market Intelligence and Research at Cavendish Maxwell. We've got a sneak peek at their April report for the Dubai property market, which is very interesting indeed. Morning, Sian.
Good morning, Brandy.
I'm a little confused, and I don't think I've ever said that to you before.
You never have.
So you start the report by saying that neither rain nor shine will stop the Dubai real estate market from delivering. And yet, sales transactions were down around 15%, but still on a daily basis came in close to all-time highs. How does all of that fit together?
So you have to look at what April was, right? So we had Ramadan, right? Came to an end, we had an Eid break. Everything was closed for a week. So that slowed down transactions, and it takes part of that. And then we had unprecedented storms that really also affected the transaction volume. So if we were to look at daily numbers, trustees offices were closed. So if you had a ready property transfer, a title deed, it couldn't happen during the e-break. But developer sales could still go on. So there was zero title deed sales during that break. And then developer sales, because they had a self-registration system with the CUD, they kept going, but still down on numbers from the week before and the daily averages. Fast forward to the storms, right? The day after the break for Eid, transaction volume spiked, right, making up for that lost ground of a week of businesses being closed. Then the rains happened, right? transaction volumes on that day went down a little bit, but not too much because people, I guess, in the morning, things were business as usual. Some people were caught off guard, maybe not thinking it was going to be as big of a storm, but they weren't as strong. The day after was basically nothing except off-plan trading. A couple of dozen title deeds, off-plan registrations still happening there. And then you'd think the market might actually be affected a little bit more. They slowly went back up. The week after, pretty much had the second highest trading day for the year. And since then, daily transaction volumes up pretty much above the yearly average. So as an effect on transactions happening, very little. But you have to remember, these transactions had contracts signed weeks, months before. So will it how we see this coming in the future months ahead? I think when you have the guys from Espace later on, they'll give a really good indicator. What we're hearing from our partners on the ground is activity is still high. So more questions are being asked, but I don't really see this affecting trading volumes going forward.
Okay, so let's look initially at the knock-on from April. As you say, it's very rare that someone goes and sees a house on Tuesday, buys it on Wednesday. You fill in the Form F and then the banks get involved and the valuers get involved and all the rest of it. So when would you expect to see the physical impacts of the rain being shown in transaction numbers?
Yeah, so in off-plan, you won't. Right. There were some launches planned during those days. One was moved online, some were pushed back, but you're not going to really see a change in that. You might see a change in the way they develop and engineer projects going forward. On title deed on ready property, you're probably looking at a turnaround time with no mortgage as quickly as 2 weeks. So let's say over the next month to 2 months, that's when we'll see it show up in the data, if it's going to show up as any impact. Are people going to be looking at properties a little bit differently going forward? Right. It's always been location, location, location. Is it now going to switch to location, elevation, and negotiation? based on this? I don't think so. Maybe to a small extent. Apartments, probably not so much. Villas and townhouses, single family homes. You have to look where areas flooded. Before the show, you were talking about DIP and some still standing water sitting there. It's always had that historically. They'll put measures in place. I live in ranches. There were a couple of areas in my community itself that they got 3 feet of water, but 10 meters down the street, nothing. Right, so I think elevation, that topography will start to come into some considerations. It does need to be factored. It is pretty much everywhere else in the world. You look at flood risk, you look at natural hazard risk and other stuff. We don't typically hear.
Cool, let's break that down into two different parts then. One being the developers. We're seeing a number of really big new master communities being launched at the moment. Are there engineering teams going to be looking at topography and drainage in a different way?
I would be shocked if they weren't, especially in the villa townhouse communities. So you've got EMA with a couple, DMAC with one, ALDA, you've got MAF, all launching really big master communities. The sand plots right now, they will be looking at topography there and putting things in place, looking at more of their engineering that goes into it. The infrastructure works. So maybe they're going to raise some ground levels. I guarantee you drainage is going to have a huge thing that they're going to be looking at. So going forward with new projects, I think they're going to just have it under control. It'll be one more thing they're paying closer attention to. Historic projects, that's where it's going to be interesting what they can do and what impact that will have on the community. And it could, you see some implications on service fees, because retrofitting basically an older community is going to cost money. Someone's going to have to pay for it. That falls back onto unit owners and the owners association at the end of the day.
Service fees as they stand at the moment, will they have been tapped for some of the work that's done where, generators or whatever had to be brought in?
Yeah, so most buildings would have the operating costs covered and they have a reserve fund that's put away. So there's a small slice of what's being charged that goes there. That reserve fund will probably cover that. I don't think they're huge expenses. Insurance as well will cover a lot of the other things that are there, I'd assume. Don't just forget the single family communities. Think about the apartment buildings as well. Whilst you're not getting ground flooding, you might get some leaks in that, but if that building has any major work that has to be done that's covered by insurance, you're probably going to see that building's premium go up. If it had uninsured stuff that's there, that's going to be paid for. Is there a big enough reserve fund? I've always questioned this. Has a lot of planning been done ahead to go, right, do we have money to cover these unforeseen things? So I expect to see service charges across the board have some impact, and it might start to reveal some buildings that maybe didn't have forward planning in place before now really be affected a tad bit more than others.
What about at the buying point, home inspection reports. I mean, at the moment, Rich and I were saying earlier, valuations are just, you know, looking at the floor plan, is this apartment, tick, tick. It's the sales value of it. Could that change, whether the banks demand more or the buyers themselves?
I think you've hit the nail on the head with banks, right? So when we purchase a property here, when does a valuation happen? Most people, if they're not getting a mortgage, one never happens. No one says, I'll do that, pay the 3,000 dirhams plus to get one. They're not happening. If you get a mortgage, the bank requires a mortgage, a valuation. That valuation is going to their, basically making sure the property's there, has it been upgraded, are there any things that sufficiently increased price? They'll look for defects, cracks and other things, but they're not getting up on the roof and checking the ACs, or there's no crawl space to go into, but they're not doing that engineering side. Buy a house in the US and you're getting an appraisal done and you're getting a home inspection done that gets into the nitty gritty. If I were buying a villa or a townhouse right now, I would be looking for that next level to have that inspection just for my own peace of mind. Do I think it will become common practice here? Unless the banks mandate it, no.
So it'll be up to the individual.
It'll be up to the individual. And anyone buying it, it would just be a good idea to have it, right? You want that peace of mind. And it may come into the negotiations. If you know, people have short memories here. 3 years from now, people aren't going to remember the place that was 4 feet underwater. I would want to know going into that, and then if that's priced the same as one that wasn't affected by rain, I'd be factoring that into my negotiations. If it's a poor elevation, it's factoring into the negotiation.
20 seconds before we leave you, the fact that these numbers are still good, what does it say about the resilience of our market, full stop?
At this point, nothing can stop it. The demand shocks me every day how we're going for record launches, but they're being absorbed. Both markets are so buoyant and going strong. Ask me to call the bottom, the top. Couldn't do it anywhere near at this stage. It's going to the top.
Ajahn Jahanki, CEO of Property Monitor, Director of Market Intelligence and Research at Cavendish Maxwell.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are taking stock of the rains. Rain on me, rain, rain. It's 1 month since the UAE's heaviest rainfall in 75 years and, of course, the flooding that followed that. We're speaking to one insurance company now, one listed company. They've just reported their Q1 results to find out what claims have looked like. Gautam Datta is the CEO of Watania International Holding. Gautam, it's lovely to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy, and thank you for having me.
Before we have a look at your most recent numbers, let's have a look at something that won't affect it in them because it happened outside of Q1, and that obviously is those unprecedented rains in April. You set up an emergency command centre at the time to expedite the claims. Where are you in that claims process now?
So right now we have seen a tapering of the reporting of incidents. I think the first 10 days were the heaviest when it came down to reporting of claims. And we have seen that leveling out. I think right now it's the whole process of adjustment, identifying the nature of damages, adjusting the losses, settlements. And something that people don't think of is finding a place to store all the damaged cars, especially. So it's still a long way off from closure. But I think the initial rush on the emergency command center has definitely eased off.
Where are you storing the damaged cars? Do they need to come to you so you can check that they are actually a write-off?
Well, we have tried to kind of simplify things, and we are proactively reaching out to our clients and taking a look at the cars where access was not possible. We were relying on pictures. As we settle the cars, and many of those are total losses, an important part of the process is taking hold of the salvage or collecting the cars from where they are and bringing them to a central yard. We usually deal with salvage through an outsourced agency, but because of the market situation, the agency is totally choked up with all these damaged cars. So we are now scouting out for a temporary property where we can store them till we are able to dispose of the salvage. So that's the next part of the challenge.
What does disposing of the salvage actually look like, by the way? Where will they ultimately end up?
That's a good question. And the questions are already being raised, whether those salvages will undergo temporary repairs and land up with the insurance companies once again. Now, usually these salvages are bought by the salvage buyers, some of them for parts that are not damaged, some of them possibly they have not been extensively damaged and can be repaired with replacement parts. It's just that it may take a little bit of time and then maybe resold. Many of these cars, after repair, they find other markets outside of UAE where there is a demand for used vehicles, sometimes even repaired cars. So at this stage, where the salvage will end up is a big question mark. But I think by and large, quite a few of them may find its way back into the UAE market.
Should they?
That's a good question. We don't have, I mean, we do have a regulation that ensures that once the cars are repaired, they have to go through a fitness test. And once they go through the fitness test with the road traffic authorities, then they are good for use. In which case, it's up to the insurance companies in terms of how they provide the cover, whether it's basic third party or whether there is a modified comprehensive. Now, should they or shouldn't they? I mean, it's a question of, the cars are, if they're still useful, then they can come back into the market. There are no issues with that. It's just that one has to be very careful in terms of buying those cars and making sure that they are in good condition.
Do you as an insurance company need to provide any information to almost go with the car for the next purchaser?
What we would advise is to ensure that the RTA records are properly examined before buying the car, because all these cars come with a report from the authorities, and those authorities obviously make an assessment of the damage. So any buyer should satisfy themselves as to the condition of the car prior to their purchase, whether it was reported damaged or not, and then subsequently the repairs that have been carried out to the satisfaction of the authority. So I think that's kind of a buyer beware advice that we would give.
Okay. So how many rain-related claims did you actually see, and what kind of spike was it on normal?
It was obviously quite intense. Just one thing that I would like to mention, you talked about the rains of April 15th. We forget that there were two incidents prior to that which took place in Q1. One was the hailstorm in Al Ain, and the other one was, again, which affected the Abu Dhabi and the Emirates, was in the month of March. So we have had two incidents, which obviously was not in the same scale as the April 15th event, but we've had incidents, and there were some extensive damages reported out of those two incidents as well. So our quarter one result did feel the impact of those losses. As far as the April 15 event is concerned, at this stage, I would say that based on whatever numbers we've received, it's a little bit below what we had expected. But again, the books are still open, and sometimes people come back even after a month with the damages. So we think that we have more or less reached our limit. In terms of the how did it compare with our normal claims, just to give you an example, if we get about 100 to 150 claims per day, we almost received 4 or 5 times that amount in the first 5 or 6 days of the claim. So it was significantly higher than our normal average.
I can see in your Q1 reports that, you know, those incidents that you mentioned in February and March have weighed in on your numbers. What's April going to mean, do you think, for you as a company and for the insurance industry as a whole when you do the numbers?
It's going to differ from insurance company to insurance company, and it will depend on the way the reinsurance programs of the insurance companies are structured. In our case, we have a fairly high level of retention on each of these risks, whether it is property or whether it is motor. So it will have an impact on our financials, especially on our underwriting performance. But at the same time, since our overall business has seen an upward trend, and there has been some rebalancing of both the prices in property and motor. And the other advantage that we have is that we have a fairly large book of life and medical. So those results have neutralized some of the negative impacts of motor and property. So on the whole, we would have seen a much stronger result in Q2. But with these claims coming in, we will have a little bit of a dampener on those results. But in terms of profitability, we expect to maintain that momentum through. The big million-dollar question is how will we fare in the remaining part of the year? Because in the first 4 months, we have seen a lot of activity related to natural perils or natural event, which has not been the case for many, many years.
Well, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. I do have more questions, but I am out of time and I wish I wasn't. Gautam Datta is the CEO of Wataniya International Holding. As he mentioned, they do have strong Q1 net profit of nearly 6 million dirhams coming back from a loss in the first quarter of 2023 on the back of improved operational performance. Do have to get that in. Thank you for your time this morning.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
So continuing the theme this morning, it's been exactly 1 month since the UAE received its highest ever rainfall in its 75-year history. That had knock-on effects across industry and lifestyles across the Emirate and the Emirates as a whole to a certain degree. And it's also raised a couple of question marks about moving forward. A lot of people talking about climate change, the impact that the future rains could have on the way we live here and work here as well. Let's get some more reaction to this one, because one industry that's been looking at it closely is that of real estate. And the team at Espace Real Estate back with us here live on the radio. The Associate Director at Espace Real Estate is Alan Cudahy, who joins us live here in the studio this morning. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you on board. And I'm sure you, like many, in the last 4 weeks have been looking for clarification, reassurance, and a few decisions and reactions moving forward. There will be people out there who will be considering their next purchase. Maybe they're thinking about moving as a result of their experiences during those high rains. Let's start with government reaction first and foremost. What's the government reaction been specifically when it comes to property and real estate?
Well, look, I think when we're talking about the subject, we definitely have to acknowledge the local authorities and the Dubai government for how quickly they responded to everything. I think their reaction at the time and after the floods was excellent. And it was really reassuring as a citizen here to know that, okay, if something like this happens in the future, you know, they're ready for it and they've experienced this now and they'll learn from it and grow from it. And it was really nice to see. But there was also a secondary aspect of this where, you know, we're all expats in Dubai and sometimes we lose a sense of community in a way, right? And it was nice to see in each sub-communities, maybe you mightn't have spoken to your neighbours as much or whatever, we got to see people within communities come together, help each other out, even if it was just checking on your neighbours, offering food or shelter. So it was really, we can take some positives from the event itself. In terms of the government, we know how they work, right? We know that they're going to look at this, learn some valuable lessons and move forward very proactively. I have full confidence that, you know, if something like this was to happen again, which is very rare, we have to remember this is once in 75 years this happened roughly. So we might never see anything like this again in our lifetimes, but you can be sure that this was a lesson learned from the government going forward, for sure.
From a developer point of view, let's move our attention to they. Obviously, we saw certainly during the first initial couple of days, a lot of chat about developers. Then we started to see a few of the developers going public with pledges and promises as well. Now we've had, well, the waters have receded, the dust has settled. A lot of people's repairs have either been completed or are ongoing. How have the developers come out of this?
Well, we have to look at how they started. So we definitely noticed some developers were better prepared leading into this than others. And it's again, another lesson developers can learn from this is we saw some developers had tankers ready. They were clearing drains. They were getting, everyone was getting ready within the community to I suppose, react quite quickly, whereas others weren't as proactive. They were more reactive. But how they've reacted to the whole situation is quite good because, I mean, as you mentioned, some developers are offering to fix up the worst affected homes for free. Other developers are offering to put people that are out of home into paid accommodation or hotels. So I think, again, another positive light on the communities within Dubai, that if you live in one of these communities, you know that if a disaster like this happens in the future, okay, there is kind of, the developers will take care of us a bit. You know, they will come out and be proactive and help us out. So again, it was another positive to take from this. And I think the lessons learned, not only from the government, but from the developers in the future, is again a positive, because they will be more prepared for this in the future if it was to ever happen again.
Turn our attention to buyers and the market. Again, knee-jerk reaction at the beginning is, right, can't deal with this, want to move, etc. Not having this again. Has there been any market move? Have you seen any data coming through in the last month that suggested that people or buyers have reacted to what we learned, what we gleaned from the storm?
It's a very interesting question, and the short answer is no, but if I can get into that a bit more in detail. So obviously straight away after the floods, it was a kind of a recovery phase for everyone. Yep. Everyone was just getting their lives back together, and that was our message to our clients as well. It was like, hey, look, forget about buying and selling for now. How are you? Did you get on okay? You know, is everything all right? Do you need anything? But we found that our experience has taught us that these events usually have some pent-up demand behind them. And if you remember, this happened just after Eid. So there was a kind of this extra time period where buyers and sellers were maybe on hold or, I suppose, allowing a time period for demand to build up. So we were very conscious of that, and we had to prepare for that as a company. We had to make sure that we were ready to rise and meet that demand. And we've actually experienced a several-fold increase in our viewings, in our offers. And just to put that into some sort of context, the past 2 weeks have been our second and third best weeks of the year for buyers and tenants contract signings. So it's been really, really busy for us. And we haven't really noticed buyers taking their foot off the pedal, more so just asking some more in-depth questions. How is your property affected by the flood? How is this community or this street affected by the flood? So we're seeing different questions being asked, but in terms of activity, contracts being signed, viewings, everything is up from us.
So productivity is up.
Even more so than before, yeah.
Which is extraordinary, yes. Really, when you think about it. Do you think that has, because of that inquisitive nature of people and things like that, are they looking at options now? Or again, are you able to see whether this is new buyers into the market that's fueling the productivity, or is this existing property owners who are just weighing up their options?
So look, from a buyer's point of view, it's too soon to tell, because we're just out of it. But a lot of our existing buyers that were looking and wanted to do viewings during that time period couldn't. For about maybe 2 weeks, they were unavailable to view. And that demand builds up over time. But you have also sellers as well, as you mentioned, that will be now considering, okay, look, is it now time for me to sell and so forth? And one of the big questions we're actually being asked, and I was discussing with one of my buyers recently, was, if I know a street or a villa was poorly affected by the rain, should I buy that, even if it's a very good price? And there is a flip side to that conversation of, okay, this incident was an extremely rare incident. We might not see this again. So if this villa or street was negatively affected by the rain, you can be very sure that the developers and the government will isolate that, and they'll learn from that. And in the future, these high-risk areas or these, I suppose, worse-affected sub-communities or streets or whatever you like to call them, they will be really under a microscope going forward. Mm. So you could say that the worst villas or the worst streets or the worst sectors affected going forward, if there was rain, will have the most attention, which could be a positive thing, right?
Could be a positive, and I reiterate that. Let's take the positives out of what was a fairly negative time for a lot of people. Hopefully, the industry as a whole will learn from that. Alan, I'm going to leave that now. Can't thank you enough for popping in.
Thank you, guys.
And this is just, well, you know, so much for all the naysayers back in the Espace Real Estate office, hey? You know, they were putting the fear of God into you before this one, but yeah, absolutely nailed it, Alan. So
thank you very much, guys.
Alan Cudahy, the Associate Director of Espace Real Estate.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.